sometimes we say that this is a path of wisdom and compassion, insight in the heart. I like to say that wisdom or insight is knowing what you need to do to alleviate your suffering and to have true happiness in your life. And love and compassion are the intentions that inform the actions that you take. So we take those actions once we discern, that's discernment, once we discern what actions that we need to take in order to be happy, we take those actions motivated by loving kindness. So, you know, our practice ultimately is in practice of fulfilling our wish to be happy, And that really means, you know, taking action in support of our wish to be happy. So happiness doesn't come by cultivating a certain feeling. It comes by taking action. And through the taking of action, then we connect to that heart quality of happiness, true happiness. So we seek to take actions, you know, if we talk about actions with regard to ourselves, actions that are an expression of self-love. So sometimes we talk about those three categories of our lives, jobs, relationships, and apartments. So we may seek a new job, or look for a new job, or move in the direction of a new career, or do certain work out of self-love, because we've discerned that that work is an expression of self-love. That's work that we can do, that we will do, that will fulfill our wish to be happy. Okay. Again, you know, we're talking about the happiness of the heart. Sometimes it's, I'm going to leave the job that I have out of compassion for myself and out of self-love. So we discern that what we need to do is to kind of give up what we were doing and move on. I mean, I always talk about how when I first came to this practice, after a few years, I got more in touch with an understanding of what was an expression of self-love, a little bit more in touch with my heart, and I realized the work that I was doing wasn't an expression of self-love. Started to ask and look, and of course that's a process of what do I need to do in order to fulfill my wish to be happy. In terms of relationships, it may mean entering into a relationship. Could be a relationship with a person of the gender or genders that we find that we connect with on a heart level. We connect with all genders on a heart level. You know what I'm saying. Or it just may mean friendships. Wise friendships. So, you know, ultimately, the relationships we want to cultivate are friendships with wise beings, wise friendship. So this is something, again, that we do out of compassion, out of loving kindness. We seek relationships, we enter into relationships. And again, conversely, it may mean leaving certain relationships out of self-love. Apartments could mean moving or going to a different place in order to fulfill our wish to be happy. Now, there's a lots of actions that we could talk about sort of on those, you know, very broad, blatant levels. And of course, there's the subtle actions that we take. You know, from day to day, there's all different kinds of actions that we take. I needed to make a phone call this weekend, you know. Wasn't an easy phone call, but I needed to make it out of self-love. That may have even been a little more dramatic than some things. I mean, it could be as simple as, I'm going to come to the class tonight out of self-love, or I'm going to meditate today out of self-love. or I'm not going to engage in a certain action out of self-love. One of the things that, you know, I was kind of alluding to, or more than kind of alluding to, in terms of thinking about the broader, more blatant actions in terms of jobs, relationships, and apartments, is that oftentimes in our lives, you know, the actions that we take out of self-love involve change. Involve changing a job or a relationship in an apartment or some situation in our lives. We all know how we feel about change. But there's a lot of actions that we can take that are even more subtle that may present challenges, like that phone call. So what often happens when we discern what we need to do that's an expression of self-love, and we consider the action that we're about to take, and we move in the direction of taking that action that's an expression of self-love, is we come up against fear. So, you know, fear is the number one obstacle to love. Fear is the number one enemy, enemy number one. The Buddha said this, to love. So, you know, this is something that we have to really pay close attention to as we seek to change, as we seek to move in the direction of happiness in our lives, as we seek to take action that's an expression of self-love. We need to recognize when we're coming up against the obstacle of fear. Fear is really what stands in the way of love. So it's very important for us to learn to work with fear if we want to change, if we want to be happy. You know, if we want to be happy, which means taking action that's an expression of self-love, we need to really learn to work with that obstacle that most often stands in the way of self-love, most often is going to stand in the way of us taking action that's an expression of self-love, which is fear. So, sort of the bad news is that, you know, we're asked in this practice to, you know, take action out of self-love, and when we do that, we often come up against fear. I mean, the practice, I always say, is about change, right? If you don't really want to change, just keep going on doing what you're doing. But if you want to change, and if you want your life to have greater happiness in it, it's going to mean taking more action that's an expression of self-love, which means that you're going to have to learn to deal with, we're going to have to deal with and learn to meet the fear that has kind of always prevented us from being able to take those actions in our lives. So that's kind of the bad news, is that, you know, if you want to be happy, you're going to have to really learn to be able to meet the fears that have gotten in the way of us being happy in the past. The good news is the Buddha gives us a way to do that. So the first thing we have to learn to be able to do, of course, is to see when our intention and the action that we're going to take starts to become informed or corrupted by fear. So, you know, it really begins, of course, with discernment. All right, well, this is something that I want to do. If it's something as simple as making a phone call or going to a class, or maybe it's something more blatant in terms of a job or a relationship, we discern what we need to do, And, you know, this is what I am going to do out of love. And we have the intention to take the action out of love. And then we need to be very mindful of when we are beginning to be affected by fear. And sometimes our intention may shift to not doing the thing that we have discerned that we should do. And we see that what's motivating that movement towards not doing what we wanted to do or thought we should do out of love, we look and see, well, what's driving that? Oh, it's fear. Oh, it's fear. It's like, all right, I'm going to make that phone call. You know, I think maybe I'll put it off till tomorrow. I'm kind of tired tonight. You know, maybe I don't need to make that phone call. You know what? I probably, well, what's motivating that decision? Fear. All right, well, I want to take a trip. I want to go somewhere and do something. You see that that's something that you want to do out of self-love, and then it's like, oh, you know, I really don't have the money. You know, I really should be doing something else, you know. What's motivating that movement away from what you had discerned was going to be in your best interests? Oh, look, and you see that it's fear. So it's really important. You know, this is, everything that we do rests on our intention. What's informing the actions that we're taking? Is it love or is it fear? Is it love or is it fear? Oftentimes when I first started doing this, and still today, I mean, always, it's going to always be like that. When I look at what's informing my actions that might be counter to what I had originally intended to do, usually what I see, it's fear. It's fear. I never really saw that before. I mean, certainly fear, I mean, for me, really kind of ruled everything that I did in my life. But I never recognized that, you know, in real time as I was considering the actions that I wanted to take. I mean, that's really our dilemma with all the emotions, right? We're all, you know, and all of our intentions, you know, they are what inform our lives. You know, the mind, aversion, desire, love, compassion. Most people don't ever really see what's motivating the actions that they're taking. They just act. They just follow their habitual way of acting. As you start to practice meditation, you slow down enough, you know, you can begin to start to look and say, well, what's driving the actions that I'm taking or not taking? So, you know, first you have to identify the enemy. And then, you know, then of course, which is not, I mean, that's a big part of what we need to do. Is to look really clearly and see, and that's why we practice meditation, so that we can get slowed down enough so that we can look and see what our intentions are. But, you know, getting that kind of concentration and slowing down enough also is what enables us to really be mindful of our action, intentions, our mental qualities, if it's aversion, desire, fear, and to bring wisdom to what's there. One of the things I was thinking about when I was thinking about this talk, which is something that I've kind of always known from practicing the Dharma, is that, you know, all of the different emotions or mind states really have to be worked with differently. It's like, you don't work with fear the same way you would work with anxiety. You don't work with, I mean, there's shades of it that are the same, but each of the different mental qualities really asks that we attend to it in a different way. I mean, that's something that's really, really useful and very important to know. It's kind of a refinement of practice. You know, it's kind of really knowing. I mean, you have, you know, it's like, you know, you're a doctor. You're a spiritual doctor like the Buddha. You're making a diagnosis of fear, you know, but then you need to know what medicines or what courses of treatment have to be prescribed. And it's a little different for each thing. For fear, it's particularly different than what it would be with a lot of the other emotions. So the first thing, of course, is we need to identify that there's fear, and we identify it as a felt sense, right? We always want to try to identify the emotions as a felt sense, because once they get onto the level of the thinking realm, they're really, really, really hard to work with. So, you know, that you really can't work with them, because it moves too fast on that level. So you bring it down into the bodily level and learn to be able to be mindful of the fear as a felt sense in the body. And this is where, you know, that's kind of true for, that's pretty much true for all of the emotions. You want to do that. Then what you do really starts to change with each of the different emotions. And with fear, it's really important that you don't try to go into it. You don't try to be with it, stay with it, okay? You know, and with other emotions, you can do that. Although, you know, for years I've always said, you know, 5 seconds, 10 seconds. Fear, 1 second, 1 second. Fear is a lot harder to hold and have space and to be mindful of. And the reason for that is because that's the way that we're hardwired, you know? That's the way we're hardwired. I mean, you know, fear is an expression of, you know, our reptilian brain, you know? I mean, we're hardwired for, you know, the second we see that saber-toothed tiger, I'm out of here, you know? So the mindfulness, for the most part, really can't hold the fear. If you try to go into the fear, you'll invariably get sucked up by it and get caught into the pain. They used to talk about this, I think Daniel Goleman in his book, not Emotional Intelligence, it was the one before that. I guess it wasn't, it was Emotional Intelligence, I guess. You know, he talked to, I mean, he was the one who sort of made this notion a lot more, people are more aware of this. You know, and he talked about what he called, you know, the amygdala hijack. You know, that the amygdala is sort of this way station in the brain where an emotional experience comes in, it gets processed through the amygdala, and then it goes to another part of the brain. I'm really showing my lack of expertise in neuroscience here. And most emotions do that, but fear just goes right past it. And you know, something, when it hits that away station of the amygdala, allows you, that's where you sort of can be mindful of it, but fear goes boom, it goes right past that. So we don't want to try to go into fear. We don't want to try to be with fear for 5 or 10 seconds. The Buddha really talked about this very, very explicitly. In the Sutta on fear and terror, when, you know, and of course the classical metaphor for fear and terror in the Buddhist teachings was going into the forest, going into the wilderness, you know. And the Buddha said, don't go into the wilderness until you're completely prepared to do that, you know. What he said was, don't try to be with fear, develop the skills that will enable you to have a skillful relationship to fear, but don't try to go into it. Don't try to go into it. Don't try to, quote unquote, be with it. I mean, most of us, and I know this was certainly the case for me, you know, I'd be in a fearful situation or I'd be dealing with something, you know, if it was around a job relationship or an apartment or a phone call, you know, and I mean, most of the time we're not aware of it, but once we start to become a little more aware of it and try to go into it, you know, we just get sucked up by it. We get swallowed up by it. So what we learn to do, you know, and then of course we become very afraid of fear. That's the classical dilemma with fear, is we become very afraid of fear because we always get swallowed up by it. Understandably, we're afraid of it because we get swallowed up by it. Understandably, we're afraid of going into the forest because we don't have the tools and the skills. So with fear, what we want to do is to be able to identify it in the body. Okay, there's this experience of fear, and then put our mind somewhere else. Okay, put our mind somewhere else, and that somewhere else, of course, is where? The breath. Okay, so what we learn to do with fear is to, what we like to call, learn to separate from it, create a relationship to it that's dualistic. Create a relationship to it that's dualistic. So this is essential to learn to be able to do when it comes to fear. So there's fear here, and I mean, this is not intellectually a notion in terms of duality. It's what we actually experience physically in the body with regard to the landscape of the body, that fear we might feel here, and there's the breath here. And we establish a duality. So what we're doing is establishing a relationship to fear, where fear can be there, but we are able to be in a place where we're separated from it, and where we're able to put it to the side. We're able to put it to the side. So this is what we want to learn to be able to do, and when we're able to do this, then we begin to develop a quality of confidence that, all right, fear can be there, but it doesn't have to be something that I get swallowed up by. So we become less and less afraid of fear. That I can be with the experience of fear. I can be with the experience of fear, and we develop the confidence that I won't be overwhelmed by it. We can put it to the side, and we can come into the heart and act from the place of strength, from the heart. So in order to be able to have that kind of duality, there has to be equanimity, you know, which basically means that your ability to separate has to be developed. That's like, you know, really studying up on the grizzly bears. That's what the Buddha said you have to do. You have to develop enough equanimity so that you can separate from fear and have a dualistic relationship with fear. And most people don't have a dualistic relationship with fear. Their relationship with fear is either they run away from it or they get swallowed up by it. Our purpose in the practice is to develop a dualistic relationship with fear. Now, but because fear is so strong, you know, the other thing about fear and it being so strong is, you know, and this really is kind of what I said before in terms of the, you know, the saber-toothed tiger is, I know for me and for a lot of us, you know, fear is really tied to past trauma, you know, that's held in the body. And once we feel that fear, it's just that, again, we go right into that past trauma. We reactivate that past trauma. You know, that's why, well, I don't want to go too far into it, but, you know, that's why for some people doing things like long retreats isn't good, because past trauma comes up and they haven't developed the ability to be able to separate, and they'll get swallowed up by it and reactivate past trauma. But anyway, what enables us to have that dualistic relationship with fear is equanimity, which means that we really develop the ability to keep the mind on the breath. in any circumstance. I mean, it's one thing to be able to say, I'm going to be mindful of the breath. It's one another thing to be, I can keep my mind on the breath regardless of the circumstances. That's equanimity, that's inner strength. So, you develop that equanimity through practice. You know, that's why it's so important to really learn to develop strong concentration. Because if we're going to deal with fear, if we're going to deal with suffering, we need to have the ability to be able to establish a dualistic relationship, subject-object relationship, to those experiences of suffering and fear, which are very strong. You know? And without a strong basis in concentration, we get swallowed up by our suffering. We get swallowed up by fear. So this quality of inner strength, we develop through breath meditation. Through breath meditation, we develop that ability to be able to stay right here. That's why it's so important to really develop that one-pointedness. I really try to emphasize that with people, like right from the beginning in meditation. People say, well, I hear sounds, I have different sensations in the body, can I go to them, can I look at them? You know, at first you need to be able to learn to keep your mind in one place. Develop that confidence that you can keep your mind in one place. I always tell that story about when I first began to learn to assert this kind of dualistic relationship with fear. And I've told the story a million times, but I was going to, a friend of mine had written a book, and she had a party down in Soho, and she invited me to the book party, and I said yes, but it's like the kind of thing that would always bring up a lot of social anxiety and fear for me. When I was walking, it's one of those things I can remember just so vividly. I can feel my feet against the cobblestones in Soho. And as I was walking to the party, the fear came up. It was like the saber-toothed tiger was. Turned down Sullivan Street, and there was the saber-toothed tiger, and I was, and I was like, oh my God, and I started, the belt, and then it was like, no, you can go to the breath, and then I, by that point, I had really been working a lot with the breath, and I was able to separate from the fear, and even if you can start to do that, maybe at that point, I could just separate from the fear for a couple of seconds, and really get that sense of the fear being put to the side for a few seconds, and it's like, I can do this. I can be in the situation that's fearful. There can be fear in my body, but I can keep my mind somewhere else. I can keep my mind on the breath and move forward without the fear ruling my life. That was a huge moment for me in my practice. It's like when I had to make that phone call, the fear came up. It's very karmic, very karmic fear. It was like, shit, I'm not going to make this phone call. Maybe Monday or Tuesday. It's like, put the mind on the breath and recognize that you can separate out from the fear and do it from the heart. This is something that you're doing out of love and compassion. And once you can separate out from the fear and establish, a center in the breath, then you have the ability to really connect into the heart. So usually where all of our stuff is all mushed together, right? This is a classic understanding of the benefits of concentration. Usually for us, we have all of this going on within the field of our experience, the ease of the breath and fear and anxiety and pain in the knee and all that stuff and love and compassion, but it's all mushed together. It's all, concentration enables us, everything separates out. Everything separates out. What was the metaphor that Ajahn Lee used? Some kind of a rock and conglomerate, in a high furnace, all the different metals separate out. So You know, there's the fear, there's the breath and a sense of ease, and then there's the loving kindness in the heart. And I can move forward, and that's my greatest strength. That's our greatest strength. So I can move forward from the heart, clear and firm in the intention, not hindered by the fear. Fear is there, but not being hindered by it, and taking action out of love and out of compassion. So that fear came up, but it's like, all right, well, I can put my attention on the breath, make this phone call out of love and out of compassion, or do what we need to do. A lot of times if you're making big decisions and, you know, you're leaving a job or you're getting a new job or a relationship or whatever, you know, it's not like it's once, you know, it's all as you're going through a process, you know, and the way that it works, of course, is what? You know, it's like you make a decision, you discern that this is what I want to do, and, you know, as that process moves forward, fear comes up, and you engage with it. Maybe I really shouldn't, you know, boom, boom, and you take a hit. And then a couple of days later, you take another hit. And that evening, you take enough hits, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're back at your desk, you know, doing the same job for 20 years. Because it's so, you know, I mean, that's what prevents us from making change. So, you know, as mindfulness students, we're mindful, you know, in real time of the arising. And oftentimes you notice it as a thought, well, I can't make that phone call. Oh, the heck with it. Who am I kidding? There's no way that I can do this or I can do that or whatever. And you see that and you learn to work skillfully with the fear. You know, as I said for myself, I always, you know, I mean, I had a certain degree of trauma in my life, and fear really kind of ruled my life, and there were a lot of things that I wanted to do, perhaps, if they were creative things or whatever, that I just never did, because fear hindered me. So I was always very interested in fear, in the subject of fear. I was always very interested in the subject of courage. You know, how do you develop courage to be able to move through fear? And even as a kid, I would read all these books on courage. And as an adult, anytime there was a book on courage, I would always read it. I mean, they were great books, but they didn't really help me a lot in terms of moving beyond my fear. And then even therapy didn't help me so much until I really addressed the trauma in therapy and started doing therapy. It was very specific in terms of related to the trauma and really worked with it on a bodily level so I could begin to develop duality and separation from fear, which is what good trauma work does. But what the Dharma gave me was a way to work skillfully with fear. Very specific, discrete skills that, you know, that I've tried to kind of describe tonight. And it begins, of course, with the breath. It begins, of course, with the breath and developing concentration and equanimity. So the teachings give us these skills, a way to move ahead so that we can live our lives in support of fulfilling our wish to be happy, so that we can move ahead in our lives out of love. The path gives us these skills in a way to, you know, true happiness.